After Dark, how's your throat, Brad? How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right.
No, you gotta, gotta suck on a lemon. You gotta do your vocal warm-ups. Mm-hmm. Unique New York. Patreon. Yeah. Thank you all. We appreciate it. You're coming in for the Nina Simone After Dark that Brad has prepared for us. Before we get into it, just want to say thank you all. Whenever you're hearing this, wherever you're hearing this, really, you are the inner circle of the cult. That is the Art of Darkness podcast. And we love hearing from our patrons. It's one thing to listen to a pod and support it. It's another thing to actually swipe the credit card and like keep it going. So we do appreciate it. We understand how money doesn't come easy. Didn't come easy to Nina.
No, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Came and went and got spent and
One of my one of my most adult insights I ever had was to realize how quickly people bill you and how slowly they pay you.
Yeah, right, right. That is definitely true. That
they don't teach you that in the public schools. They don't say you're going to get billed before the service is even done.
Yeah,
and you're going to
get paid as late as possible.
Take 90 days. Yep. In any case, amen. Yeah, we appreciate you all. Yep. So you got some juicy stuff for us.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one to start with. Why? I'll throw it to you, Kevin. We're going to talk about the time her violence got out of control. We're going to talk
start right there.
Let's do it. Okay. So this is, I believe it's 1993. This is when she's living in France, 1995. Quote, reading from the biography. On July 25th, 1995, Nina made the headlines after shooting at a 15-year-old boy with a 9mm air pistol because he was making too much noise while swimming in a neighboring villa's pool. The teenager suffered injury from fragments on different parts of his body. Nina was immediately, quote, investigated for assault with a weapon and possessing a Category 4 weapon without authorization. She was taken before a judge the next day and had the case postponed until 23rd of August 1995. She was required to surrender her passport to the police as part of her probation. Her public defender, Jean-Paul Mouillet, declared that health reasons could explain an act that she immediately regretted and so stated to the police. In court, she was described as depressive, fragile, harassed woman. The psychologist the court ordered to examine her confirmed that she was, quote, incapable of assessing the consequences of her actions. She sometimes lacks the ability to control herself and finally was suffering at 62 years of age, a terrible solitude. No one supports her anymore, either from within her family or among her friends. Nina Simone, who was not present at the trial, was given an eight-month suspended prison sentence, 18 months probation, and forbidden from purchasing or possessing a weapon. She was sentenced by the Provence Criminal Court to pay a fine of 3,000 francs, to pay 20,000 francs in civil damages, and to undergo medical treatment. Isabel Turin, a friend of hers, made sure that Nina was defended before the Court of Appeals. She argued the particular context and mutual lack of understanding between the Americans and her neighbors, the children's repeated provocations of her, racist insults, the tension between Nina and her neighbors fed by the fact that they couldn't understand one another yet were compelled to live side by side. Finally, Isabel pointed out that Nina's presence in Bourg-Bel-Air was not welcome and that her illness played a central role in her behavior. After confirming that Nina had paid the civil damage, the court quashed the conviction of 23rd August 1995 and declared her free. Apparently, the kid was hospitalized, like pretty seriously wounded by this.
You can use air guns to hunt small game.
Yeah, you can do some real damage. I mean, I don't know that there was damage that he was ever going to die, but he could have lost an eye.
You don't want people going around shooting kids with air guns.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And you kind of have to nip that in the bud too, because if they start there and they don't get checked, it's like, okay, well,
right. Mm-hmm. And you know, who knows? It's just an example of like, well, how out of hand did the violence get? It got that out of hand. At one point, apparently, she also, I think it was that year or the year after, she was trying to return some sandals to a store, and she got into some conflict with the cashier or whatever, and she pulled a knife. Nina did. And it's just like, she couldn't control
the French love when Americans start to get violent on Maine. They love that. They love violent Americans in their country who probably don't speak. I'm assuming she did not speak perfect French.
No, she didn't. I think she spoke a little, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They love when Americans with next to no French start to shoot their children with air guns.
Right. Right. And she, and also you've got all this erratic behavior already, you know, she mm-hmm. wasn't, there was also a time that the biographer went to go see, was telling a story about somebody going to see her and getting a taxi at the airport. And when they gave the address, the taxi driver's like, "You're not going to that crazy lady's house, are you? We don't go there. We don't take people there." Like, it was always a problem, right? Always.
Yeah, she's almost, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but she's almost like a witch. She was like a shamanic kind of like an archetype.
Yeah,
scary lady. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we'll talk about that leads us right into the story of Kevin. Have you ever heard of the Black Dog?
No. Maybe. It's like a figure of English folklore, I think.
Yeah. Supernatural specter or demonic hellhound that has also been seen throughout Europe and the Americas. I'm just reading from Wikipedia here. It is usually unnaturally large with glowing red or yellow eyes and is often connected with the devil. Sometimes it is an omen of death. Sometimes it's associated with electrical storms.
Like very much like the hell dogs in Ghostbusters that are used to summon Gozer. The Gozerian.
Yeah.
I'm personally very excited for the new Ghostbusters. So they're going back to Manhattan.
Oh, are they? Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I think it comes out in March. It's Ghostbusters. Oh, I didn't know Frozen Empire. Have you not seen Afterlife? You got to watch Afterlife.
I haven't seen Afterlife.
Yeah. Afterlife is the one, see, because they burned through so much goodwill with that ugly reboot that nobody wanted. But Afterlife is so good, dude. You really have to see it.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, yeah. Sam, I think it was the original director. I think his son directed it.
Oh,
I don't know what but it's like in the family. It's like the Ghostbusters sequel that we needed. And it's got a bunch of child actors in it, but they don't suck. And it's got a little bit of a Stranger Things vibe, but the Ghostbusters are there. It's And they did.
Is it any Harold original Williams. Cast?
Oh, yeah. The whole original cast, except for Harold, because he's dead. But he drives the entire plot of the movie because it's Ghostbusters.
Right. Yeah.
Got to watch it.
Okay. Cool. I like it. Yeah. Just quick on the origins of the Black Dog. This is a folklore thing. There is actually a movie. It's funny that it's lined up. There's a movie Black Dog with Patrick Swayze where he part of it is he's a trucker and it's a very small part of the story, but he saw a black dog on the road and it caused him into the accident. He caused him to have an accident in which he like lost his license and went to prison. Anyway, the origins of the Black Dog, according to Wikipedia, are difficult to discern. It is uncertain whether the creature originated in the Celtic or Germanic elements of British culture. Throughout European mythology, dogs have been associated with death, right? This is a thing. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story from the biography. And now this is Roger Noopy, Noopy the Groupie, who has become part of Nina Simone's inner circle. This is when she's living in France and she's speaking of witchcraft. She's gotten deep into, she's off living in some other world in her head. It's kind of a dark place a lot of the times, but I'm just going to recount this story. It was Roger Noopy's turn to visit Nina. He stayed in Bois de Bel Air for a week, making sure she was following her medical treatment to the letter, taking care of her, trying to entertain her, and trying to get her past the anxiety that had been torturing her since her brush with the courts. This would be after the shooting. During his stay, Roger witnessed strange goings on. Quote, At that time, Nina was only sleeping a few hours a night. We were sitting at the kitchen table very early one morning. I'd made breakfast and we were eating omelets, and I got up to put Caught Up on the record player, a Millie Jackson record that Nina really liked because the lyrics were very sexual. She would play Millie Jackson for days sometimes. She'd sit at the piano and play along with the songs or ask me to dance. When I came into the kitchen, a small narrow room, I found Nina in the company of an enormous black dog. "Where did that dog come from?" I asked. "He's been here the whole time, Roger." That worried me. I had never seen that dog in the time I'd been in the house, and the doors had been closed all morning. Still, there it was, sitting at her feet. Nina began to laugh. "You can pet it if you want." But I didn't want to. I was scared. I declined her offer, and we went back to eating as if nothing had happened, the dog still laying at her feet. We started talking again. I'd forgotten the dog was there when she interrupted me to say, "If you look out the window, you'll see the dog is outside now." "Where is it, Nina?" "He's sitting in the car. He's waiting on us to go shopping." As Roger Nooper was telling me this story, I saw the hair on his arms and his neck stand up when he got to this part. He was reliving the scene and only a few inches in front of him, having a private conversation that sometimes made me feel a strange presence at her table. I could see terror in Noopy's eyes. Nina, and this is Nina's voice. "David, don't believe me if I don't This is Noopy talking to the biographer. "David, don't believe me if you don't want to, but I can tell you that I got up from the table. I went to the window overlooking that street, looking toward the car, and the dog was sitting inside." What was that dog? A vision? Her father? What else? We finished our breakfast in silence. We got up, locked the house, and took the car to the city of X. A-I-X. I don't know how to pronounce it.
X on Provence, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Patreon. Yeah.
I drove on the way there and watched the dog in the rearview mirror. It was sitting there in the back, not moving at all. But when we arrived in town, we parked and went to do our shopping, leaving the dog in the car. When we got back, it was gone. I was relieved, but worried too. Nina drove on the way back. She was dangerous at the wheel as ever. Then suddenly she began honking the horn and laughing. "Look, Roger, look at the dog." It was sitting on the hard shoulder, watching us drive past. I never saw it again after that. "Did you ask her about the dog?" "Yes. Later, I asked her to explain the dog to me, but she just answered, 'Come on, Roger. I don't need to explain it to you. You know perfectly well who that dog was.' I decided never to bring the subject up again." Back up. "Because you were worried?" "No, because really, in her case, it wasn't really that strange after all. That sort of thing was part of Nina Simone."
Whoa.
So make of that whatever you will. This guy seems to think it was real. Okay.
Cool. Wow. Now, she's really, dude, I feel like we could do another full episode on her, and for real.
A lot. I glossed over tons of stuff. I mean, as you do, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, this drug Trilofan. So I got to admit, as a fan of Nina Simone's music, Early on in this research, I listened to a fairly late interview she did on BBC. And watching this, her accent has always been unusual. If you listen to previous episodes, it is what it sounds like. It's a woman that has a slight Southern accent that is trying to be matched with like overcorrected proper manner speaking. It feels kind of forced at times.
The Southern gal who went to New York when she was 17 and then moved to the sort of Yankee East Coast, upper East Coast, and that whole megalopolis. And then they have that weird mid-Atlantic accent, which if you want to be respectable, that's how you sounded until like the 60s. And then it kind of changed.
Yeah.
It changed to the Midwestern accent, actually, because of news.
Sure.
Of Cronkite and then Brokaw. The perfect accent that we have is the ideal accent for, we were born for podcasting.
Yeah. That's right. Mm. Yeah, that's what my mom always said. You have a face for broadcasting, for podcasting.
You got a skull for podcasting. Yeah, Brad has a skull for podcasting. Somebody on YouTube left a comment saying, "Brian looks like Judge Holden if he had a better credit score." About you. And I'm like, "Do you mean Brad?"
He does
have a magnificent skull.
It's nice. It's
back. Yeah, it is. It is. It's good. Yeah. It's phrenology hours on AfterGuard.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I watched this late interview with Nina Simone, and frankly, she comes off in it as brash like loud and like she can't seem to, she doesn't know what register she's speaking, like what volume she's speaking in. Borderline incoherent.
That's my favorite kind of incoherence. Yeah. When there's just enough to get your...
Yeah, yep, you know what they're saying, but it could just veer off into nonsense at any second. Mm-hmm. And frankly,
I think that comes over in the show.
Right. It's a borderline incoherent podcast brought to you by
.com.
And so I guess I saw this interview and I got thinking, was like, well, she couldn't have always been. And this interview is like from the late 90s. She's almost 70 years old. And I'm thinking, like, she couldn't have always been like this. Right. Like, we know when people say, oh, you know, she's 90 years old, but she's sharp as a tack. I was watching this interview and it's like, she is not sharp as a tack at all. Like, I'm not sure she knows where she is. And she seems like
she's both sharp as a thumbtack. She's off.
Yeah. And sort of like also, but like also like a certain like de classe. Something like very about
like a
how
weird,
she's like
rough kind of edge.
Yeah, I thought this can't be what she was like, you know, really. And so as I'm reading, I find out that she in the 80s, she starts taking this drug, Trilofan. And Trilofan, they credit it with her saving her life. She took it the highest prescription dose that you can take. And just really quickly, what is Trilofan?
I'm looking it up right now.
Is I think that the I think that's the corporate name. I think the drug name is perphenazine. It's a typical antipsychotic drug. It's roughly 10 times as potent as chlorpromazine, which is another, I think, commonly used antipsychotic, as Thorazine. She's basically taking like a more potent version of Thorazine constantly. And when she, it's typically used to treat agitated depression and other, you know, psychotic related disorders. But I got interested in, okay, like, well, what are the side effects of this thing, right? There's always trade-offs. And get this. So possible Trilofan side effects are what are called extrapyramidal symptoms. These are symptoms that are archetypically associated with the extrapyramidal system of the brain's cerebral cortex. What does that mean? Well, this means you can have moment dysfunction, dystonia, which is continuous spasms and muscle contractions, akathisia, which may manifest as motor restlessness. So you're just like moving around all the time, Parkinson's-like symptoms such as rigidity, bradykinesia, which is slowness of movement, tremor. You can also get, the most common thing is tardive dyskinesia, which is you have very irregular, jerky movements. And you watch
you
her,
into like a goofy cartoon skeleton.
Yes. And I think, and apparently when she started taking this medication, they told her handlers, they're like, listen, over time she's going to take it, and these are the kind of symptoms that she's going to start to experience. But you know, if you don't give it to her, she's going to die. She's going to
have a psychotic break.
It's not going to go well. So it is a trade-off. And here's the thing. One of the great piano players of her generation is going to have tardive dyskinesia, where they can't control how their body moves anymore.
Oh, yeah. Right. Like, when did she go on this?
In 1988.
Oh, pretty early.
Yeah. So, I mean, she lived another 15 years. And so I think when you see later interviews with her and stuff, I think what you kind of realize is there is a woman in that brain that has taken a trade-off between becoming completely insane and her body. And having her full range of function. And she decided, the decision was made that, you know, we're going to live relatively sane, but our body is just going to deteriorate over the next 15 years.
Man, and dude, like a pharmacy is so fucked up. They're like, this will stop the crazies, but it will turn you into a goopy cartoon skeleton physically.
Right.
Like what?
Right.
Wild.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Drugs are crazy. And I'm not just talking about like the fun drugs. I'm talking about the pharmaceutical drugs are wild, dude.
Yeah.
And of course, they don't know why it does what it does either. Most of the time, they're like, "Well, we just figured we just threw this at it."
And that's what's great too is they throw a lot of like names at it, and it makes it sound official. It's tardive dyskinesia. What's that? Well, it's when this happens. You're like, well, why does that happen? Oh, well, we have no idea.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And if they just called it like spastic contortions that make you look wonky on the BBC, nobody would take it. Right. But if you throw a little Latin at it,
then it's okay. And so, and so it just made me realize that, like, yeah, we watch that later stuff. You're watching a woman's body, her nervous system slowly just falling apart on her. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's,
well, Brad, thank you for your hard work on that episode, man. Yeah, I am prepping Hesse. I think I'm going to be able to keep to our schedule. So next week I will do my damnedest. If something changes, I'll let you know. We had our little emergency around the house and I'm trying to wrap up some work, but I think I should be able to do it. I know so much about Hesse. I mean, I actually don't know. I don't know very much about his life. Well, how to say this? He was a very autobiographical author. So I feel like I know him, but like I'm getting to know more about his biography, and it is like, oh, that makes sense. of course he would write Siddhartha. So I'm really enjoying it. And he's one of my favorite authors, and he's a little passé now, isn't he? I mean, he's sort of, people go, oh, he's somebody you would read when you're like a teenager. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there's more going on here.
There is definitely more going on. I mean, I don't know anything about his life, but of course, Siddhartha is sort of one of those ones that a young man or a young woman reads and it means a lot to them. But like, that's, Steppenwolf ain't for teenagers.
It's a banger.
Right. Glass Beanstalk's not for teenagers.
He's maybe the first author that we've covered who, and I don't want to get too ahead of it, we'll get a little Hesse teaser here.
Yeah.
A little Hesse appetizer. He, at one point in his career, just said, oh, I'm a confessional author. Can you imagine someone now, like, they'd never let you into grad school now. Right. What do you mean? You're not an activist. You're not trying to save the world with your literature.
Right.
So it's very interesting. You almost accuse someone of being confessional now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting. That's going to be cool. He's a big influence on me. Like Glass Bead Game is great.
He won the Nobel Prize.
Right.
I mean, people kind of write him off, but I think he's going to come and go. He's going to kind of come back into the zeitgeist and leave the zeitgeist. And I think that's his destiny, his fate. Anyway, I don't want to get too far ahead of it. We'll leave it for the next episode.
Yeah.
You're preparing Burroughs. We got to reach out to Peniel about the art, show art. And thank you, everybody, for a great year. We're not done yet. Season 4 is coming in hot. If you haven't seen the trailer, go to artofdarkpod.com. You know where to find us. I posted it while we were doing this episode. And good Brad, thank you so much. I learned so much about Nina Simone. And,
thanks for riding with me, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. I'll always ride shotgun when you're ready to talk about a singular genius like her. Yeah. Dude, she's like all of our subjects, I think, with almost without exception, are like geniuses of some magnitude. Mm-hmm. She's maybe she and Kubrick are like... there's no question, no contest. You're dealing with some sort of a creative gene.
Freaks.
In the pure sense.
Freak of nature. Freaks. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Right.
Thanks again, Patreon. Mwah. All right, Brad. Take care, man.
Yeah, I'll see you soon, buddy.
Go and say a prayer and get all the spells off you, dude.
I do need to do that.
Going into the Christmas season and you got to just get it off. There's only... Remember the reason for the season.
Yeah. And yes, indeed, sir. Goodbye.